This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Shall we begin?
Expecto Patronum!
It brought back!
Oh, is this it?
Et voilà, your magnificent chambre de bonne.
Chambre de what now?
Chambre de... it means the room for the housekeeper. The space is small, but the view...
Oh my God, I feel like Nicole Kidman in Moulin Rouge.
You've got all of Paris at your feet. There is a wonderful cafe just down below. A friend of mine is the manager.
Wow.
So, ça va? It's good?
Oui, oui. Très good, très wonderful.
Great.
Hello, everyone. You are listening to Popcorn Culture. I'm Lee Tree Lin, and joining me today, Sharmila Ganesan and Arvind Yuvaraj. And yesterday, we threw it back to an Emily who so badly wanted to go to Paris, who we could all support. And today, instead, we're talking about Emily in Paris, which is entirely different. It is, of course, a new show on Netflix, and it was created, this is important to say up top, by Darren Star, he of Sex and the City fame.
Do we want to pretend that we're being neutral? I mean, I'm just asking for a friend.
No.
Do we ever pretend on the show? We don't. No, let's be honest.
So this is a really early stage. I will confess, for all of what I'm about to say in the rest of the show, I will caveat this by saying I breeze through the show, right? So it's about Emily, who, through a series of fortuitous events, ends up going to Paris to work for a marketing company. She's American. She's there to give them an American eye. And the rest of it is really just a mishmash of her getting to know Paris through, like, the most bizarrely ignorant American eye ever in the world. And yet I binged through, like, all... The whole season in 2 days, and I still don't get it. I don't get why I was so compelled to watch something that I objectively dislike.
Oh, since we're talking about context, so I watched this when I was like on an isolated island. And when I say isolated, I mean that there's nothing to do on this island. It's a tiny island that people island hop to. And I still found it incredibly boring and incredibly empty and incredibly surface level. But like you, I was able to binge all of it. Like, I didn't want to stop. Every time an episode would end, I'd be like, I want to see what happens in the next episode. Even though it's completely pointless. It gets you hooked in the worst kind of way. And then before you know it, you finish the whole of season one.
So while watching it, one of the things that I said to Sharmila at a low point in the ebb of having to see this for the show was, I wish Emily wasn't alive. And that's not to say that I wish her ill and that she was not, I didn't wish her dead. Mm. I just wished that she had never existed so that I didn't have to watch her bumbling around Paris. And it's a strange experience because, like you guys say, I entirely agree. It's very frothy. It's very easy to watch. It's quite pretty. I think we should say that. But the prettiness has nothing to do with the show. It's because Paris is incredibly picturesque and that's where the show is set. But I do have to admit that I struggled with the American-centric focus. And I know that that can sound hypocritical coming from us, a show that primarily reviews, watches, deals with American pop culture. But I think there's a difference between dealing with soft power when it's soft and, you know, you're just like, all right, fine, New York does look great, versus this thing of like, just she's gonna be okay because she's crass and she does everything wrong and she stumbles her way through everything, but somehow this alternate universe she's operating in just keeps rewarding her, and I found that a bit difficult.
No, this is a movie that seems to think it exists in, like, I don't know, the 1940s, when it was okay for Americans to travel the world and act like they were better than everyone. The problem with this series is that it's set in 2020. She's supposed to be a social media expert who apparently doesn't know anything about the rest of the world. And I think it's having someone like that is okay if you're going to interrogate it, but it's not okay if you're going to have a show where she's going around insulting people for the way they make steak or criticizing people for getting the dates, quote unquote, mixed up when it's actually the US that has their dates the other way around. None of this is okay because in today's world, that's considered really ugly, ignorant behavior. And yet nobody around her seems to call her out on it. And yes, maybe that's a huge ask for a show like this, but let's not forget Darren Star made Sex and the City, which was never afraid to interrogate those questions. Yes, they were fluffy or shallow, or they could be. It was never forgiven as a, oh, that's just how they are and it's fine. It was actually a show that called them out on it just as much.
But I think that is the biggest problem, though, because I saw, like, Darren Star, I think, could ask proper questions when Sex and the City was popular. I think the problem is that he's asking the same questions today, because I can see the jokes kind of repeat themselves. I can see the themes sort of repeat themselves. And the sort of like even the humor that was slightly edgy at the time makes its way into this show. But we are in a decade where Game of Thrones is like normal cable TV. So that stuff, all those jokes are kind of juvenile by now. And even the stuff that the show wants to discuss or thinks it's discussing. So that was my take. I thought that the people behind this show were outdated and were trying to replicate the success of Sex and the City by making this program and asking like big questions. But those big questions are kind of smaller, outdated, obsolete questions in 2020.
So I think one of the reasons why the show might feel, to cite you, Arvind, empty is because it is entirely free of repercussions. And this happens over and over again because Emily finds herself in sticky situations professionally. And all these really like emotionally fraught situations are just sort of lightly tossed through each episode, and then in the next scene it's as if the previous scene didn't happen, or in the next episodes it's as if whatever conflict that occurred in the previous episode never happened. And so because of that, the show is unable to sustain any sort of dramatic pressure or any sort of there's no drama, you know, to speak of. There's no worry that there will be drama. And I think that that is actually the key to its success. The fact is that you never worry for her. You don't worry for anybody in this show. You don't have to emotionally invest. And I think in a year where we are being asked to emotionally invest in everything, our own safety, our, you know, the businesses that we love and appreciate, like our families, watching a show where the stakes are so low, there are literally no stakes. The only steak to complain about is one that is apparently too rare. You know, it's an incredibly easy watch, I think, for that reason. You never worry, you know, so it's fine.
So we did an episode on sort of the memeability of Emily in Paris last week on the Daily Digest. And all the people we spoke to, they kept saying how this is the perfect pandemic watch. And that's really the vibe that I've been getting from online as well. No one thinks the show is objectively great, but everyone thinks it's a great watch for now because you can just kind of disengage and look at the pretty things and kind of laugh along at the pretty people. And to be fair, everyone except Emily is actually pretty interesting.
I want to steal something that one of our colleagues said. So Sim, who hosts the Property Show, he was talking about Emily in Paris, and he said something that you can't review a show like Emily in Paris the same way you would a show with any kind of quality. So you have to turn on like a different sort of brain to see this. It's like it's trash TV. It's like if you're going to write think pieces about something like this, that shouldn't be the case because you shouldn't even think to begin with, you know. And I wanted to steal that specifically because I thought that's what makes it difficult to review this show. Because is there really anything in it to talk about? Because all these questions that we're asking are true. And yes, the show should have done a bunch of things, but is it even that kind of show? Is the show even made for one, an audience like that, or two, to even ask those questions in the first place?
So here's the thing, right? The show references Gossip Girl and it does it very openly. And I was never a huge fan simply because I think the wave of it, of its popularity, just happened to miss me. But from what I saw and from what I read about the show, it was able to do this frothy, everybody is beautiful, everybody's having balls every other week and all the rest of it, while also dealing with emotions and dealing with emotional fallouts. You know, people were so invested in the couples of those shows because they managed to do that classic teen thing and you invested in them. So I don't necessarily agree that something that is, or rather, I guess my question is, if this weren't released in 2020, would we all feel the same way? If we weren't all trapped in this weird vortex where feelings are unwelcome, you know, would we view Emily the same way? Or would we be judging it by the standards of the things that have come before it and that it openly references? Gossip Girl, Sex and the City.
I think the latter. I think that if it hadn't come out at this time, and travel is a big deal, yeah? The fact that we get to see Paris, that we get to see people interacting in open spaces in a way that none of us have in a while.
Eating all croissants.
I know, yes. And Instagramming them and getting 20,000 followers, as you do. But yes, I think all of these things, for the show's benefit, it's worked out really well.
Yeah, the timing just, you know, in its favor, 100%.
We're talking today about Emily in Paris. Don't let our pleasant voices fool you. None of us liked it. But, you know, if you feel differently about it, please let us know. You can WhatsApp 018-789-8899 and tweet us at BFM Radio.
Bodacious, fabulous minds. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello everyone, you're listening to Popcorn Culture with Lynn, Sharmila and Arvin, and today we're reviewing Emily in Paris. And I wanted to qualify something that I said early on, which was that there were times where I really wished that Emily just did not exist, and that I could watch a show about Gabrielle and Camille and, you know, all the rest of them, minus the American. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit, not to think piece it, but to ask whether or not we are coming to an end point of the ugly American trope. Because I'm not sure that the show knows that she's being an ugly American, but at the same time, there are moments that are so intensely, I hate speaking French, I only want to speak English, I disrespect your plumbing system,
the 500-year-old plumbing system.
The 500-year-old plumbing system, the way you calendar. Yeah, I she doesn't appreciate, you know, a lot of the everyday aspects of French life. And I'm just like you said earlier, Sharmila, it's kind of out of fashion. But my question is it? Because this show has been wildly popular.
So the counterpoint of that is also her incessant they don't say it's Instagram, but social media posting, right? Because the things that she does choose to post about France, or Paris particularly, are all so banal and everyday and boring. And I'm not saying there isn't a charm to seeing a city like Paris through a very, very naive and fresh eye. Maybe there is. But it's also just the way she does it. She takes pictures of French people being honestly just quite normal, living their daily lives, and posts them up with cutesy captions. So there's just an air to all of it that feels, like you said, quite ugly American, especially when it exists in a social media space. Because while you can make a case for someone coming from Idaho or whatever, not knowing anything about Paris, kind of being this way, the fact that people, the show thinks that people would celebrate and respond to that online is what feels out of touch. And Darren Star did defend the show in an interview, and he said that the show is meant to be this, you know, like someone who's a little bit naive and comes to Paris and is sort of bumbling around trying to understand it. But I think they think it's charming when it's really not.
So I thought the same thing the first couple of episodes when she was behaving the way she was. And I was like, okay, so the show's trying to show you that Americans are different when they go overseas and they don't really understand the world and how they put up with other cultures and stuff, until they started painting the French as like blanket statement, this whole population of people going through like a massive sexual revolution, and they all like super open and discuss topics that nobody in the world talk about. So I'm like, so wait, now, is she the one who doesn't understand the French, or does the show not understand the French, or do you have like a stereotypical look at everyone outside the US? And that's when I realized that maybe the show is trying to preach to the world like, oh, look, you know, this is how you learn about other cultures, when it doesn't understand other cultures at all.
Either that, or it hasn't given it even that much thought. I'm just not sure, you know. We spoke yesterday about how the Devil Wears Prada could be regarded and watched through several lenses, right? It's like frivolous fashion, rom-com, workplace comedy. Like you can appreciate it on those levels, and there's enough on each of those stages to keep you occupied for its running time. And the thing about Emily in Paris is I'm not exactly sure whether it's what it's supposed to be doing. I think it's meant to be in the... So we've talked about the Gossip Girl, Sex and the City references. I also think of it as Ugly Betty, because it's also sort of this... this character who rises into a position of power and has to explore a new world, sort of, and who is also naive. So I think that if you look at Ugly Betty, which was a lovely show, uneven but lovely, you see there how you can have a character who is naive and who is a bit sheltered, but who is shown to be learning things. I think that's the other thing, right? Like, Emily doesn't learn stuff. So the way I see the show is... it is what it is. It is nothing more than that. Like, it's not attempting to be more than a very, very facetious light rom-com stretched out over 10 episodes.
Betty, more significantly, was a nice person. Emily is just not a nice person. She's not nice to anyone unless they're useful to her, right? She finds her neighbor hot, so she's nice to him. Camille helps her on the street, and so she's nice to her. She tries to suck up to her boss, so she's nice to her. But actually, everyone around her are much nicer people than she is. She's surrounded by people who are just, even her so-called mean colleagues are actually really quite nice to her, even though she at every turn undermines how they do their jobs or speak or just live their lives. And yet they go out of their way to make her feel included in their own sort of ordinary ways. So I think actually for me, by the as the show went on, I just felt like this was such an example of American exceptionalism, in the sense that I don't even have to care or be nice to you. You'll just treat me nicely because I am who I am.
Do you think the show was made for an American audience specifically, and that it would work differently for them as opposed to it does for us? Because that scene that you were talking about, so when she first meets a colleague, she goes into the office and she speaks in English. And you're supposed to look at the others as people who are being mean to her because they are speaking in French. For me, I saw that and went, yeah, of course they're speaking in French. She's in Paris, right? But I don't know how that works in an American context. Maybe they're watching it and going, oh, you know, are they speaking behind her back because she can't speak their language? You know what I mean? So it's like different audience and how they react to it. And I was thinking maybe for the rest of the world, they're looking at Emily and going like, yeah, if you're going to go to another country for like a long time, at least have the courtesy to learn the language or, you know, pick up a couple of words. Like, don't just barge in there and speak a language that the people in that country don't understand or don't want to speak, right?
Yeah. So the language is one thing. There's also the differing values, and how there is a sense that Emily's values are the ones that we are supposed to be aligned with. Because again, when you look at her French co-workers, who, by the way, are incredibly charming and funny.
And seem to really have work-life balance down pat. Like, I want that life.
Oh, yeah.
Correct. Yeah. I mean, sure, they're inappropriate, but you know, that's part of the charm, I guess. And so, like, when you look at her co-workers... it feels as if you are supposed to be thinking that Emily's values, whether it's about work, whether it's about romance, whether it's about intimacy, those are the ones that you're supposed to be going, yes, exactly, everybody should be like that. But I think the show is not prepared to deal with the fact that you might be watching Emily and going, okay, you're being a little puritanical, you know, like for somebody who is here and you want to sort of enjoy French culture only in piecemeal chunks. You know, you only want to have the good food, but you also want to complain about cheeseburgers. You want to enjoy the hot men, but you also want to, you know, pretend to be offended at every sort of small thing. And so I struggled with that. I mean, as is very clear, I don't like Emily as a character. I think that the show as a whole... was difficult for me to watch at times because I had to be in the mood to be with Emily.
So the show starts off with her boss, Kate Walsh, being the one that's supposed to go to Paris, and then she finds out she's pregnant and so sends Emily instead, right? I would have watched the heck out of a show that was Kate Walsh, an older American woman who could speak French, learning to live in Paris.
Now, hanging out with Sylvie.
Hanging out with Sylvie. I don't know, getting to know Gabrielle, that's fine. I would have been on board. In fact, I would have watched a show really with any of those other characters. I would have watched Mindy, her best friend, the one from China, who's an heiress, who is a nanny in Paris. Gabrielle, who's a chef from Normandy and is trying to make it as a chef in the big city. Camille and her weird family that owns a champagne winery, whatever they're called. Any of those people.
Would you guys watch a show where Emily went to different countries? Because she's a meme now. She's a meme and different countries are putting her in their own context. Like you say, like locally, we have like Emily in like Perlis. And I was thinking, would I want to watch a show where she gets out of Paris and then she goes to like another country and tries to make it there? Like you could just spin off series this thing. So season two is in like Australia or whatever. Like, would I want to watch that show? Because now you just see this sort of bumbling character try to make it in different cultures with different people. Would that be more interesting?
I would hate watch it. Given how much I hate watch this and how quickly, I do feel like there's more hate watchability left in Emily. But I don't know for how long.
There's two elements to the title, right? It's Emily in Paris. I wouldn't swap out the city. I'd swap out Emily. I think I've made that quite clear.
Mindy in Paris. That's the show to watch.
I don't know. I mean, Betty in Paris. If you gave me America Ferrera and you chucked her in Paris, like, which actually I think is something that Ugly Betty did do, I'd watch the heck out of that. So, I think... I don't mean to be so down on it in the sense that was it a light, easy way to spend something like 3-4 hours? Sure it was. Did it take me to Paris and make me feel for a moment or remind me that Paris exists and places like Paris exist and they really are there and they're waiting? That was nice. You can get that elsewhere also, though.
Yes.
Is it a guilty pleasure, though? Is there pleasure in the guilt or no?
I think so. Like, I kept telling everyone, it feels like eating that really horrible cheap candy that you halfway through are already feeling sick of, but you just finish it and then you're like, why did I do this?
Because it gives you a headache afterwards.
Yes, but yeah. You somehow weirdly enjoyed the process. For me, that was what the show was.
Arvin?
Yeah, I don't know if I'm going to watch season two, though, but yeah.
Clearly, it's a desert island watch for you.
Yes, I'll save it when I go to the next, like, you know, deserted island or isolated island or, like, shipwreck somewhere, I don't know, one of those times.
Yeah, maybe I'd watch it on silent with captions and just enjoy the scenery. I think there are ways. And I'm not saying that it's not enjoyable, but it's enjoyable and it comes with so many other questions that the show just refuses to deal with. So, yeah, we've been reviewing today, such as it is, Emily in Paris. If you watched it and liked it, if you watched it and didn't, you know, either way, let us know. That number to WhatsApp is 018-789-8899. You can also tweet us at BFM Radio. This is Popcorn Culture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.